the podcast for everything paranormal. This is the 222 Paranormal Podcast with your hosts, Jen and Joe.
Hey, Joe. Hey, guess where we're at? If you can tell by the background noise, Joe and I are at Michigan Paracon 2017.
Can I get a woo-woo?
Woo-woo! Oh, my gosh. This is an amazing event. We've got tons of people coming in. There's tons of very famous people here, which we love.
Every time we turn, there's somebody. Oh, wait. Stan Freeman talked to me this morning.
Yeah. What did he say?
He asked me if they had coffee.
Because you look like a waiter.
But hey, you know, I guess anytime somebody talks to me is great.
That is great. So Joe and I are here, and we got our booth all set up, and we're just waiting for somebody to come by and buy a sticker, copy of my book, a dowsing rod, or just come and tell us their ghost story.
It's typical of us.
Yes.
We set up 2 days ago. What day is it? I don't even know what day it is.
Today is Friday. Yeah, so can you believe it? I don't know what
Thursday
day it is.
Thursday night, we set up, and we're like, awesome, and we're staying in the same hotel where the conference being held.
Mm-hmm.
So we get up, come down here, go eat breakfast, and we're like, well, we better go set up the rest of the stuff before people show up.
Yeah.
We get down here and the place is full of people already. Typical. That's typical of us.
I know. We should have got here at like 6:30. No, kidding.
Yeah.
Joe and I, We didn't get very much sleep last night. I don't know. The people in the room next to us were very loud. They must have been partying.
There was a lot of partying going on.
Yes, definitely.
Last night, we came down to the main area, foyer or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was partying. And the party went on down all the rooms. I never did find what room the main party was in, but
I don't know.
Just all over the whole hotel. Everybody's just getting wild.
We're getting crazy with it at Michigan Paracon. So Joe and I are in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, is where they're holding it at the casino here. And I cannot say the name of the casino because
Kewadin.
That's it. I always want to call it something else. I don't want to even say it. But so we got here on Wednesday night, and we are like, cool, they got bingo. We're going to bingo. Because, you know, we're 107 years old, and we like to play bingo. And and Joe and I had some really good luck at the bingo table.
Yeah.
And at the slot machines.
If anybody has noticed on our Facebook page, we posted it. And basically, our whole trip is already paid for.
So I had to roll around in all the money that we won. Because that's how I am.
You are...
Joe's distracted for a second.
Uh-huh.
But anyways, you know, anytime he gets a pretty lady that walks by, he's distracted. But that's okay, because we're going to find him
I'm going to hide.
We're going to find him a boyfriend right here.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. And Bobo just walked by.
That's Bobo?
That's Bobo.
Oh, my God. He lost like 200 pounds.
Yeah. Well, you know, honestly, Joe, the camera adds... Seriously, adds weight. That's why they always make these actresses starve themselves.
Yeah, but
because they look normal weight when they're on camera. But if you see them in person, they are stick figures.
He is a stick figure.
And
he
got his haircut, too.
Yeah,
it's all
what I mean.
Shaved off.
I didn't recognize him at all.
I know. It looks fantastic. And you know who else we saw? We saw Dustin Parry is two tables down from us.
Yeah.
And Steve Gonzalez is next to him. And he's very trim and skinny. He's very thin.
We also have someone on the other side of us.
So we have Tim Shaw is on the other side of us, Reverend Tim Shaw. He is a medium psychic. He's an author, and he's doing a reading right now, and he's got a really sexy shirt on.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah, so this is just an amazing event. I do recognize some of these faces from the other shows that we've done, though. And
you definitely could notice when he walked in the room because he announced himself.
I know, it's so funny. But he's Amy Bruni is here, and Adam Barry, and we've seen Chip Coffee like 14 times.
Yeah, he keeps walking past.
I know. He keeps
giving us the hey.
Hey. And, but this is cool this year. I really cannot believe how big this conference is. There's so many vendors, and there's speakers all day long.
Yep.
And
tomorrow also.
Amazing. Yeah, tomorrow too. So it's going to be a long weekend, but Joe and I have survived. I survived going over that giant bridge. Tell them about our experience driving over the bridge, Joe.
Well, I didn't have no experience. I just drove over the bridge.
Joe drove.
Jen was in the passenger seat.
Having
panic
attacks.
Couldn't jump
attacks.
Out because the water was right there.
Oh, my gosh. We had to drive over the graded part because the other lane was closed. And
it was
singing. Having a heart attack the whole time.
The bridge sings.
Yeah, it's going, and I'm like,
it changes tone,
oh,
and then
sweet Jesus, get me off this bridge. And I thought that one was bad until I saw the bridge that goes to Canada.
Yeah.
From Sault Ste. Marie to Canada. Oh, my goodness. And now if people are like me and don't like bridges, you would die if you saw this bridge. You'd die and come back and haunt me for telling you about this bridge. It is so high up there, and there's, like, no guardrails. And it's, like, that. You know what reminds me of the bridge? And I know, Joe, you haven't been on that, but I'm going to take you there one day. It's the 7 Mile Bridge in Florida,
okay.
Except for it's really high up in the air, and there's no guardrails. Oh, my God.
And the best part about it, we picture a bridge. I think it's 300 to 400 feet in the air because of the ships that go underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably 6 miles long, but it's
probably
it's up there. I mean, and there's, but the neat thing about it, yesterday we were watching, and the cars were stopped on it.
Dead stop.
And we
no
went
pun
to
intended.
Yeah. I was like, look at that motorhome up there. And then when we came back from eating, the motorhome was still in the same spot.
Yeah. And it was so windy. I'd just faint.
So they were actually stopped on the bridge for hours.
Oh, man, those poor people. Well, you know.
I'd get out and party.
Yeah, right. I'd be in a fetal position on the ground. But anyways, so, Joe, what do you feel like the energy here is? It's just, it's very high energy in this place. I mean,
I don't really have a word for it because you've got psychics, you've got, you know, Stan Freeman with his UFO stuff.
Yes, we got actresses walking by.
Yes.
And, that lady, she was in some horror movies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so she does these conventions. I don't know her name, but she's got a very pretty dress
on. We'll get her on the air.
Okay. And she's with her dad, I think she said down there. That's her dad. So, anyways, we're just hanging out.
This is the way for us to meet people.
We're just hanging out.
Yeah. But this is a way for us to meet people and introduce you guys to a lot of famous people that we don't know.
Yeah. So if you guys, you know, want to come to our we have some other conventions that Joe and I are going to go to. But, definitely, if you get a chance, come down to Toledo or up to Toledo or side to Toledo. You know, we have two conferences that we're doing. We are doing Paranormal Toledo at the Collingwood Arts Center, very haunted Collingwood Arts Center. And then we're doing Glass City Paracon at Owens Community College.
Yeah, it's at the college.
In October. So September and October. So put them on your calendars. Come out and see us. Buy a book. Buy a sticker.
And then November, we have Flint, Michigan.
Yes.
The Mid-Michigan Paracon.
Yes. That one's very interesting, too, because they've
And we'll tell you a little more about it later. We have actually one of the founders of it.
Mm-hmm.
She's here. She's doing her thing over on her booth. We're going to get her on a little later.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll stay tuned. We're going to be back in a second here.
Yeah, we're getting our first guest ready, and let's sit down.
John Zaff has just peeked at us. He's in the curtain behind across the hall, and he just peeked over and
Who's
looked at us.
Who's the man in the curtain? It's John Zaff.
Paying no attention to the man behind the curtain. No, we are paying attention to him because he's a cool dude. He's a cool cat.
Yeah.
Anyways, okay, Joe, let's take a quick break, and we'll be
right back. Yeah, let's get this interview ready, and we'll be right back.
And we are back, and we have in the booth here a very, very special guest who is just enlightening us with all this. Yeah, lightning struck us. Steve Ward is here, and he is a Mothman investigator and expert. I'm going to call you expert because you know more than me.
I'll take it.
All right.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah, I noticed his shirt. The shirt he has on today says, out of body, back in 5 minutes, which
That's
is
awesome.
So fitting for today.
I love it.
So tell us a little bit about your experience with the Mothman.
Well, I guess as a young man some decades ago, You must be familiar with the works of Frank Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
That was probably the first thing that got me started in that. But the real key catalyst that got me interested in the field of UFOs and the unexplained was in March of 1966, were the famous Michigan swamp gas sightings. You know,
yes.
Ann Arbor, Dexter, mm-hmm. Hillsdale. These were right in my backyard growing up in the Detroit area. So the invading alien hordes were right there. Mm. Unfortunately, I was in junior high and I didn't have any wheels, so I couldn't go out and investigate myself. But it was, you know, they called them the swamp gas sightings because Dr. J. Allen Hynek at the time was still attached to the Air Force. It's kind of a debunker, you know, and he said some of the sightings might be swamp gas, and they just ran with it. But in reality, a lot of these things were seen by policemen. They said there were landings and so forth, very credible. So that really got my attention. But something that really foreshadowed what I'd be interested in doing for decades later, that following November was the first sighting of the Mothman, which came across the wire services and went all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's when he chased two couples down Route 62 from the dreaded, the infamous TNT area, which was a munitions area during World War II, but long since abandoned. But it allegedly chased these two couples, down into Point Pleasant at speeds of almost 100 miles an hour.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, it's kind of similar to what we were in Erie, Pennsylvania, and there was a landing there. They had a UFO landing there.
Was that the Kecksburg?
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. Stan Gordon, who was the guy on that, talked to.
Yeah, they pawned it off as, what, Venus? I think they said it was Venus. But it landed and left footprints that were like 40 inches deep. And they said it would take 10,000 pounds of pressure to push it into the dirt that far.
If that's the area I'm thinking of, well, there was also
it was in 1964, I believe.
Okay, that was the Kecksburg. And then Stan Gordon, who was on that, in 73, 74, examined a lot of, there's a lot of UFO activity, but was also in conjunction with sightings of Bigfoot.
Yes.
A really strange combination.
Mm-hmm.
That's my area of interest, where these things all seem to come together. UFOs, Bigfoot, Men in Black visits,
mm-hmm.
we've
yes.
heard of those.
Uh-huh.
Outbreaks of poltergeist phenomena, other strange cryptids. So that's always been fascinating to me. You know, some people want it, and I did too. Early on, I was very happy in my paranormal comfort zone of little aliens from space jumping out of their craft in their little silver suits, collecting soil samples. But then as time went on, in fact, it was John Keel, the author of the Mothman Prophecies, he wrote a book before that called UFOs Operation Trojan Horse. And he's one of the first ones to gather all these bizarre things together and demonstrate that they probably are connected somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's something that we were talking about before, about how you see my mind's just going blank, but you see the UFO sightings, and then, like you said, with Bigfoot. And we're talking to somebody that belongs to MUFON, and he said that he thinks that Bigfoot and the Greys are biological probes sent down by the UFOs.
That I don't know. I mean, a lot of things I have to suspend judgment on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really don't know. But there is this bizarre connection. I'm speaking at the Mothman Festival this year, which is great honor to be asked. And the underlying theme is the connectedness of so many of these different things that people don't think are connected.
Yeah.
And now Rosemary Ellen Guiley is also here this weekend. She was doing research in shadow people some years ago. And she has found out that a significant percentage of those people experiencing those apparitions or bedroom invaders, or whatever you want to call them, were also classic alien abductees.
Oh,
they were having that kind of experience.
That's interesting.
And I thought, wow, what is that connection?
Yeah.
So that's kind of I'm going to mention that in the beginning of my talk. Say, hey, this is where we're headed.
Mm-hmm.
So you better strap in.
Mm-hmm.
But there are all kinds of, let me give you an example. We've all heard of car stoppages, right?
Yeah.
The UFO shows up. We're assuming some kind of electromagnetic drive or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Car stalls. Well, There was a case. Now I don't have my notes in front of me, but mm-hmm. there was a. You know, we've all heard of phantom armies, right? Phantom soldiers.
Yes.
And there's been several classic sightings in. Let me make sure I'm lined up here. Good. There are many. Yeah. a little technical thing there.
Yeah.
There have been some great sightings of phantom armies in England. You know, they would manifest from a certain battle or whatever, and people could even tell what the heck they were from their uniforms, and they would hear horses, they would hear, you know, all kinds of commotion and so forth, as if it was real.
Okay.
Then it would fade out. Okay. There was a case where one of these manifested in modern day. The woman was in a taxi cab. The taxi cab stalled. The meter went absolutely crazy, and they felt like they were being battered up against an invisible wall. The army dissipated, and everything went back to normal. Okay,
very interesting.
Here's another weird one. You can interrupt me anytime if
no,
I'm talking.
No, go ahead. This I'm loving this.
We've been talking earlier about connections in folklore, Celtic folklore, and so forth, and some modern day UFO experiences. All right, I say some because we can't blanket everything. Mm-hmm. There's a case where Sir Walter Scott was told by a friend of his, he was in a cart, a wooden cart, a horse-drawn. The little people, the good people, or whatever you want to call them, the fairies, started to congregate, and suddenly the cart froze. It's not clear as to whether the horse froze up or the wheels locked. And then they started trying to grab him and to pull him off.
Oh
my God. Well, he did all kinds of signs of the cross and everything. Remember Betty and Barney Hill? The classic UFO abduction case from New Hampshire in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Their car stalled. They were pulled out of the car by certain entities. And, you know, we view that in a UFO context. Well, anyway, this is a situation. You have a vehicle stoppage with no machine parts, nothing metal, all right? But that's not the weird part.
Okay.
I got another case. Again, I can't give the specifics.
Yeah, that's
gentleman's
fine.
Modern day, he's driving down the road, and car stalls, looks up. Classic Bigfoot standing on side of the road.
Wow.
Saying, what the heck is this?
Yeah.
Bigfoot walks away, car starts again. Starts up a little ways, all of a sudden his engine starts sparking, starts sputtering, looks up, there's another Bigfoot, either the same one down a little further or his cousin was there.
Oh, wow.
So here you have a vehicle stoppages interference with different aspects of the paranormal.
Yeah.
And I can give you another example if you want.
Okay.
Okay, crop circles, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Crop circles. Let me get a little bit of water here.
All right.
It's interesting because each one of those stories, the main connector is energy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's right. And it may not be energy in the context that we usually think of or in a very combustion engine sense, to speak. Okay, crop circles. Now, I've always been annoyed by crop circles.
Okay.
And you might wonder why, you know. Okay, look. You've got... Now, I know an individual that has been to England under cover of darkness and made... joined together with people and made a complex crop circle. All right?
Okay.
Dr. Simeon Hine wrote a book called Opening Minds some years ago. He's the first one that I was aware of that started talking about how people were intentionally making these dramatic, beautiful crop circles in secret, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, that's fine. But then we have some people that say, hey, you know what? I was in a field and I saw these little balls of light that are so often, you know, reported in conjunction with crop circles.
Yeah.
And I saw them created within a few moments, the whole thing laid out. Okay, well, maybe. And now Linda Moulton Howe, we all know her as a researcher, right? She has reported how some people have been out under cover of darkness again, making the crop circles, and then the light phenomena shows up after, almost as if the guys that usually make them say, hey, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
This is our job. Or maybe the simple action of this creativity with Mother Earth produces the phenomena somehow.
Okay.
But now we can go back even further.
Yeah.
See,
so, right.
Again, as an old-timer, you know, getting close to Medicare, right? Okay. a simpler time. We had saucer nests. It was just like usually one circular depression. People would see a craft perhaps come down, and they see what they assumed was just the landing spot. Okay.
Yeah.
Famous one in Queensland, Ohio in the 60s. Fate magazine covered one called There's a New O in Ohio, all right? During the Mothman fiasco, all that stuff, there was one across the river in Ohio that happened, okay? So And but then the thing is, if you go back, maybe it's not quite so simple, because if you go back further in folklore, they're identical. Either they're depressed areas or burn marks. The fairy rings, the good people, they were seen dancing around these circles. They were sometimes these light balls that we might call orbs today, or small craft were seen. So there's that weird connection there. But I'm going to go a step further. If you go back in the old literature, they talk about how, now again, a lot of these reports of the fairies were given firsthand to people in certain books you can find, where these were not tales told and retold, okay? They were just like you guys go around interviewing people modern day with their weird experience.
First-hand accounts.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So there are cases where mushrooms are associated with these fairy rings, and they talk about their, you know, the little people would sit on them, use them for stools or whatever. Okay, well, that's a long time ago, right?
Yeah.
We wouldn't have that in modern day, right? It would never happen. A classic case in Argentina in the mid-60s, covered in the MUFON journal. There was actually this they had, the military came across this. There was this alleged landing spot. They'd been seeing these UFOs come down. They go down there, they see the circle, and there are mushrooms, these giant mushrooms growing around there.
Wow.
And they even came up with the name of them. And if I could remember the name, I couldn't pronounce it.
Yeah.
But the scientific Latin name. But here are these bizarre connections across time that don't seem like they should be connected.
And they're all connected. You're blowing my mind right now. You realize you're blowing my mind.
So I have a question about Mothman.
Oh, sure.
The physical description of it, when they've... You know, people's accounts, when they describe it, is it feather-covered? Is it leather-covered? What's the physical description?
But there has been both. Now, generally, when it was John Keel that did the initial investigation, or Gray Barker, another name you may know from West Virginia, another big UFO researcher back then, there are some variations. Generally speaking, Keel got a little over 100 reports of basically the same thing, about 7 foot tall, roughly man-like, wingspread of about 10 feet, red glowing eyes. That was very common. Some, you know, it was just dark. Sometimes it was kind of black. There were a few people that did say feathers.
Okay.
So, but here's the thing. Mothman doesn't seem to have been a physical entity, maybe paraphysical. And the reason I say that is this. It would be seen taken. It would take off straight like a helicopter sometimes, without flapping its wings.
Mm-hmm.
It would the eye wasn't eye shine. It was definitely generating from it. You know.
Okay.
So there were just several things where it's almost more like a, I don't know, hologram projection.
Oh, okay.
It did. It. Some people said it kind of squeaked, made a noise like a large mouse. Now, here's something that people do not know is some of the early reports Keel got is it sounded like there was a humming noise or something mechanical connected to it.
Yeah.
So, you see, the thing is, a lot of times researchers, and I think we may have all been guilty of this, is that stuff that doesn't fit our preconceived notion or what we kind of would like it to be, we kind of throw out. Well, John Keel didn't do that. He covered he looked at everything. And put it all in one pot, so to speak. But so I don't think Mothman was a hidden animal that we just haven't discovered. There's something much stranger going on there.
I noticed that on ancient Indian drawings, you'd see they were calling it the Thunderbird, but in the drawings, it almost looks like a Mothman drawing.
Right. There are several. A chapter in the book of the Mothman prophecies called, might be Winged Weirdos or something, or maybe that was an article he wrote. There is a whole series of reports of winged creatures, apparitions. Yeah. Kent, England, exactly 3 years to the day before the first Mothman sighting, some teenagers saw this thing. They saw a UFO or something, a light in the distance. Then they see this creature that looks very much like the Mothman. They said it was looked like a man without a head, and it had these big wings.
Okay.
Well, Mothman looked kind of like a man without a head. He looked kind of. It did look like a big owl sometimes because of the way the eyes were kind of hunched down.
Mm-hmm.
But the you know, the owl explanation doesn't really fit. Neither does the, what was it, a sandhill crane is one of the ones they came up
yeah,
with.
Yeah, I've heard
well,
that before.
They have reports that the Mothman, when it walked, it kind of had like a a waddle to it or
yes.
a rolling effect or mm-hmm. something. They described it not as like, you know, walking like a normal...
Kind of shuffling.
Yeah,
right.
That's yeah. the word I was looking
a
for.
A shuffling
thank
gait.
You.
The a classic sighting, Marcella Bennett. This was just after the news broke with, you know, all the Mothman. They thought, oh, heck, we're going to go out to our friends in the TNT area because there were houses out there.
Yeah.
And scare the crap out of them, right? Okay. Well, it didn't work out so well. As they were going toward the house, her brother is pointing at this strange light in the sky. He said, I want you, there's something up there, you know, and she didn't want to be bothered. And then all of a sudden, this thing rose up from the ground,
oh.
and it was the Mothman.
Okay.
It just freaked her out. She passed out, or stumbled anyway.
Yeah.
She fell on her infant child, which was okay, by the way.
All right.
But just freaked her out. I mean, she's worried about her child. She's worried about this thing. And they went into the house. It came up on the porch, apparently, and that shuffling gait you were talking about mm-hmm. was going back and forth. So mm-hmm. it was, you know, it didn't, nobody really saw the legs, if they had legs, very
yeah.
clearly. So you wonder, you know, I have to wonder if, I mean, I'll be the first one to say that I don't know what the heck it was. But you wonder if there's a bit of a shape-shifting element, or maybe this thing manifests a little bit differently.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You were talking about energy, right?
Yeah.
Well, maybe this, John Keel, in this book, Operation Trojan Horse, which really messed me up, you know, because I was so content with my preconceived ideas. He talked about this being energy, and he used the term ultra-terrestrial rather than extraterrestrial. Mm. He used it as a literary device. But he said that he believed that some of this might have simply be transmogrification.
Okay.
I got that out.
Never heard that word before.
I think, remember Kelvin and Hobbes, the comic strip?
Yeah.
Yeah, he used it a couple of times.
Oh, okay.
All right.
But that kid could do anything, right?
Right.
He thought there were transmogrifications of energy that would actually physically, temporarily manifest.
Oh, okay.
And in the Mothman Prophecies, he talks about, he thought that possibly the only real, objectively real thing about some of this were these, as he called them, damnable meandering lights. People would see this light, whatever it was, some kind of energy, intelligence, natural state, something natural to the earth. But people would be programmed somehow. Some would see a giant UFO that others might not see. Some might see a hairy, shambling biped wander off into the darkness. But it would manifest in different ways. Now, Keel was up front. He said, he would say he didn't know what, you know, people thought he had all the answers, you know.
Yeah.
Where are they from? What are they? What was the Mothman? He didn't know. Very interesting. You know, I recommend to people, he was an amazing thinker, and there has never been more of his writings available now. I mean, all his classic books, but I think it's New Saussurean Press has gathered back and all these great articles from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and they're in these anthologies now. So you can kind of see the way he changed his thinking, and, you know, he wasn't static in his thinking, so he's not all the same. But just a remarkable thinker.
Wow, that's great.
Have you ever seen yourself, the Mothman?
I have not, but I did have kind of a weird experience.
Ooh, tell us.
Okay.
We love weird stuff.
Now, I have to preface this. Okay. I'm the kind of guy that never has weird experiences.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was with my buddies one time. We're out in the TNT area, right? They had to go home, so I thought, well, do I have the intestinal fortitude to go out here alone? You know, and now it's no big deal to the locals. They go out there, hunt, camp, you know, fish and all that stuff at all hours. But I thought, so I went down. There's this Potter's Creek Road is the road you want to go on if you want to get access to these old concrete igloos. Very creepy. A lot of people go out there and are very successful with getting paranormal EVPs and having experiences, shadow people and so forth. Okay. So I just went out there alone on the one road we usually go, and I went in one of the igloos, and I thought, okay, you know, nothing ate me. I'm good. So I start back to my motel room. Now, I experienced a couple flashes of light, like a flash, like a strobe, and then a flash. And it could have been something mundane, but I couldn't figure out what the source was. And I was so stupid that I didn't try to figure out where was it in the road so I could go back the next day to figure out, you know.
Yeah.
So I wasn't on my game, you know. I just, my only excuse is, hey, guys, this doesn't happen to me. You know, I'm not the dude. So then, that's not the weird part, though.
Okay.
Here's the weird part.
Okay.
I go back across the river to Gallipolis, Ohio, go back to my motel room, open the door, and the TV set turns on by itself and starts flipping through channels. Again.
Oh, my God.
This is a guy that this stuff does not happen. So, let me tell you all the other things I did wrong. I didn't check the remote to see if it was pressed in, even though I saw the TV come on, right? I didn't try to use the remote like through the walls to see if it somehow would, maybe some errant signal would come in and do it. I did everything wrong.
Okay.
All I could think of was the end of Poltergeist. Remember when the family flees the subdivision, they go to the motel? Okay.
Yes.
So I thought, well, I'm going to unplug the damn thing and go to bed, and that's what I did.
Oh.
Now, if there was anything that followed me there, he stayed there because nothing followed me home. He's still there flipping channels. But I have a postscript to that if you got time for the postscript.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. The next year, I'm there with my same buddies, right? We're crammed in one of these motel rooms trying to save some money. And we're sitting there talking at night. This is the room next to the one I was in.
Okay.
The TV set comes on by itself. That was it. And so we did the remote thing, trying to figure out, nothing worked. The next day, one of the guys and I came back in to get a change of clothes or something, whatever.
Yeah.
And the TV set turns on and then starts flipping through a couple channels. All right.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Uh-huh. Last year at the Mothman Festival, that's several years past, some friends of mine are crammed in another room about another one or two, all in the same corner of the motel. So they're trying to watch TV, and it's a different TV. It's one of these newer ones. The ones that I had my experiences on were an older style, So they're sitting there, and they're trying to adjust the volume because it seems like it's going down, and they keep cranking it up, and it could be an electrical thing. And then all of a sudden, it would start blasting, and they'd have to turn it down. Okay, no big deal. But one of the times they adjusted the sound, a pop can fell off the nightstand without any help. So I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah.
Except the corner of that motel might be pretty damn haunted. I don't know.
Sounds like poltergeist activity to me.
But he just likes to watch television his way, whatever it is. That's it. That's my big experience.
Night of just sitting there trying to find something to watch or flipping the channels. And their time difference is different to us, so he does it real fast.
But no, I've never seen... I've seen a couple odd things in the sky, but nothing too spectacular. I don't know what I'd do if I... I tell you what I tried to... the stone chambers in New York, upstate New York?
No.
They're supposed to be these energy hot spots. They call them root cellars, but they really were ancient. They're all over upstate New York.
Okay.
Just up there, too.
Well, Rosemary Ellen Guiley took me and a couple other guys and gave us a grand tour one weekend of all these great spots. And she had an experience. There's a place called Hawk Rock that has one of these ancient, what's the name for the symbols? Petroglyph.
Yeah.
Okay. And one night she was there with a group of people. She saw several sets of what seemed to be eyes.
Ooh.
Okay. They were just points of light. She wasn't sure what they were. Something passed over her, made some kind of noise or agitation or whatever. Anyway, I thought, I'm going there. And I went there alone one night. And didn't experience a damn thing.
Oh,
but I was freaked out a couple times.
Yeah, that would be freaky. Be there by yourself. Every little pebble or stone or whatever. What's that?
Every little critter that broke branches when they walked. Is that a deer or is it a bear? What is this?
Is it Bigfoot?
Chupacabra.
Yeah.
Chupacabra.
So it's not that I haven't tried, but it just hasn't worked out.
So you're going to be talking at the Mothman Festival.
Yes.
When is that again?
That is the third weekend in September. Every year, third weekend in September.
All right. And everybody keep an eye out for them. And we'll put your information in our show notes
so that if anybody
wants to come out and see you.
And I'm on Facebook, Steve Ward. They can contact me there if they like.
Awesome. Well, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, very
so interesting.
I love this.
Yes. You can come back anytime.
I'd love to. Thanks
Bring
for having
Mothman.
Me.
Bring the Mothman.
Nope. Too scary.
All right. Thanks.
Bang, bang, bang.
Bang, bang, bang. Okay. Okay, and with us today at Michigan Paracon, we have Lady Beth, who is an intuitive reader, psychic medium. Welcome very much.
Hello.
Reverend Lady Beth.
Hello. Welcome. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Glad to be here.
Yes, isn't this a great show?
Oh,
this
my
gosh. This is amazing.
So busy.
It is, which is great. Because you hate to come and, you know, not make gas money to get home.
Yeah, exactly. And the people that we're meeting are incredible.
Yes, they are. It's been great. So tell us a little bit about what you do and where you do it and how you do it.
Okay. I am a psychic medium. I live in Everett, Michigan. We live right on the Muskegon River. It's actually our backyard.
Oh,
beautiful.
Nice.
Yeah. So we are water protectors on top of that.
Yeah.
And I learned when I was about, well, my parents learned when I was about three that I had abilities. And we lived in a small town in Ohio called Lewisburg. And my dad was a teacher and a coach. And so it wouldn't have been... It would have been more likely that they would have hidden me or whatever. But they didn't encourage and they didn't discourage. They just let me be me, which was a wonderful way to grow up as being with the abilities I had. And to this day, I know that my grandmothers had abilities, but I did have a near death right before they discovered it. Jumped off a dock and almost drowned at 3 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
So we're not sure which thing... brought it up.
Okay.
But we're big believers that, when I say we're, my husband's a psychic too, in that everybody has intuitive, they just have to tap into them and develop.
I always wondered that if some, you know, just some people are born with it, if it's generational, or if it's just, you know, like you said, when you have a near-death experience, it just opens
the gateway.
Yeah, I always think it's fascinating.
I always say it like singing. Some people can sing naturally, and they have a beautiful voice. We all can sing, and I could get lessons, and I could sing better, but I'll never sing like that person that had the natural.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
So that's what it feels like to me.
That's a nice way to put it. Now, you said... that you think that you had this since you were a young child. Mm-hmm. What did you do to develop it, to understand it, to come into it?
Well, I kept it down for a while raising children, and I was a single mom after so many years that I was exhausted all the time, so didn't have time. What happened was I was caring for Barry's father, and he passed away, and we were at it was just a regular, like, autumn... festival, and we went up to look at this woman who made these angels, and she looked at Barry and I, and she said, "Why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing readings?" And I was like, "What? Excuse me, what?" And so she was very specific. She told us my father-in-law's name, and she was very good. Her name is Carol Borowski, and she took us under her wings and helped mentor us to feel comfortable with our gifts and be out. She actually fooled us. She had to come to one of her fairs, and she said, "I just want you to see what the fair is all about." I said, "Okay." So we showed up, and she said, "Actually, I had two readers that didn't show up, so you guys are going to be
reading." Surprise!
Surprise!
But I needed to be thrown into the deep end of the water. And after one or two, it was a natural, so it just has gone from then. But I think the passion that we have is that I feel like we help so many people. They help us too, just by meeting them and sharing with us. But I think that's what drives us, is that people really have the answers within. They just need to be taught how to listen to those answers and how to be quiet enough to hear them. And yes, we get psychic things and we get mediumship, but we also try to empower them to listen to their own intuition.
Okay.
Go ahead, Joe. You had a question?
No, I'm fine.
Okay. So when you say you're water protectors, can you just explain a little bit about what that that encompasses?
I didn't know I was going to be a water protector. I turned 60 this year, and I thought, you know, we'd probably have that part of the life that we just travel. But Barry is part Lakota, and Standing Rock came up where on his land, his people's land, where they were bringing in a pipeline on native lands and going to put it under the Missouri River. So we spent 3 months in freezing weather.
Wow.
It was November to February and part of October. And amazingly, you know, they told us we won, and then there was the election, so we didn't win after all. But we sang and we prayed and we tried to talk to the people that were oppressing us, and it was our own government, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And we were met with cold water being poured on us, and rubber bullets and bear spray and lots of awful things. And so, okay, let me explain. Standing Rock was actually three different camps. It was Sacred Stone, Rosebud, and Oshete. Oshete was the big one that you would always see on the news. The actual action was called in by LaDonna, who owned part of that land on the reservation.
Okay.
And she's the one that called everybody in, and she's the one that started the first fire. In Native tradition, if you start the first fire, you keep it burning all the time. You never let it go out.
Okay.
And then when the other camp sprang up to help, they had to come and get burning embers from LaDonna's camp to start their fires.
Okay.
So we got to know LaDonna quite well when we were out there protecting the waters. And after it was all over, she asked Barry and I to become the burning embers of Standing Rock, that we go out to other actions and in a loving way start fires of protecting the water, protecting Mother Earth.
Oh, okay. That's awesome.
So that's what we're doing. We've been to several other places. We actually had our ticket spot to go to Hawaii to protest there. That's supposed to happen in a month or two. We've got stuff in our backyard right now. Line 5, do you guys know about Line 5?
No, not at all.
Line 5 is a 60-year-old pipeline that runs under the Mackinac Straits, right beside the bridge.
Oh.
It hasn't had maintenance in 24 years. If it breaks, everything's polluted.
Yeah.
Everything is. So we're fighting that. We're fighting to get the maintenance, but we'd also like to see the oil stop. It's Canadian oil. It's not even ours.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We don't need it.
No,
we have
we don't need it. And we should start shifting to green energy. But anyway, that's a whole different show.
Yeah.
And then there's Nestle, and I live in Everett, Michigan, and it's actually Everett, Michigan, that they're trying to take more water to bottle. They want to increase it by 60%, and my neighbors and people already have wells going dry, and our rivers are lower, and we're stopping them from taking any more. They pay $200 a year to do this.
$200 a year to pump the water that you got?
And Nestle actually, the chairman actually said, water is not a right.
But he has the right to buy it.
Right.
For dirt cheap.
Yeah. So that's about my activism.
Yeah, that's all right.
So I see here that you do coffee ground readings, fairy cards, and palm readings as well. What do you look at on the palm to read? Is it the lines?
It is the lines. Oh, it is the lines. It's also how the hand is formed, like if it's meteor.
Okay.
It's also like the flexibility of the hand. There's a lot more to it. But
how did you learn to do that?
Just reading. Okay. And I believe that spirit will talk to us any way we are open. So if I put cards out, they'll speak to me that way. If I put tea leaves or coffee grounds out, they'll speak to me that way. If natives put out nature, they'll speak to them that way. If you're in the Christian belief, the Bible will speak to you that way. You know how people will open the Bible to a certain page.
Random pages.
Yeah. So I believe that spirit's bigger than us, and they know how to speak to us.
Definitely.
So, so that's whatever the person wants, I feel like I could sit, and even if we didn't use anything, which often happens, just their energy.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, that's a great way to communicate, is because everybody is putting out the energy to the universe.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Now, when you get your messages from spirit, do you have a spirit guide?
I do.
Have several? Or
I have several, but my main one is Packy, that my mom and dad originally thought that he was a make-believe friend until they finally questioned me. And I said, oh, no, he's a man that stands in the doorway with a bright light behind him. And so then they knew that I'd been guided. I haven't been able to find anything about his name, but he helps me. But mostly it's energetically, and I really believe I'm just the telephone.
Okay.
I'm just the empty vessel. So there shouldn't be ever any ego involved with these psychics, because we're just a telephone.
Yeah.
But we just happen to be one of those people that are open to it and not afraid of it. A lot of people have the abilities, but they shut it down with fear because we've been told that it wasn't
normal.
Yeah, or biblically correct or whatever.
Yeah,
or
we hear
things
that
like
a lot.
That.
Yeah. You know, like people being suppressed and you know, kind of ridiculed for. I mean, we even experienced that just for what we do, and we're just a channel of communication. You know,
exactly.
We just like to tell people our stories. But I have a question. It's not paranormal related, but because I'm a romance author, I like to know, how did you meet your husband? Because I'm trying to find a man, and I need to know where. I'd love to hear how people.
Well, it's just funny you should ask, because it's a pretty romantic story.
I love it.
Except for the fact that this is my third marriage and his third marriage, okay?
But
so let's get that out of the way.
Comes in different
forms, yeah. it's the Trinity.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Third time's charm.
But I probably met him when I was three.
Okay.
Okay, probably younger. Our parents were friends, and so I've known him forever. And we went to kindergarten together. So he knows all my secrets, and I know all his, because it's a small town.
Okay.
So we were just friends through school and high school and everything, and I moved up to Michigan from Ohio, and we hadn't seen each other in, I'd say, 27 years maybe, and we were doing, I was planning, helping plan the high school reunion from the distance I was at. I don't know why I was asking. And he saw it on classmates.com and messaged me, and it was back when we... You know, kind of.
Yeah, you had to email each other instead of Facebook. Yeah, I get it.
And I was going through deleting all those spams. And I stopped my finger midair and I said, Barry Gilmer, I know that name. Oh. You know, so I stopped myself, read the message, said, I don't know if you remember me, really. We grew up together. We're like brother and sister. Oh, that sounds weird.
Yeah.
And we started talking back and forth messaging, and he called me maybe a few days later. We couldn't quit talking. It was June 21st when he came up to finally see me, which was only a month or so after this. It was 2:10 p.m. There's a reason I know this.
Okay.
And I came out of my massage. I'm a massage therapist, too. And he grabbed me, kissed me, whatever. So from that day to the next year, we were married on June 21st at 2:10 p.m.
Awesome. I love that.
The native tradition on Sleeping Bear Sand Dunes Beach.
Oh, wow.
Oh, romantic. I get goosebumps just from that story.
So I used to make fun of people that found their soulmate right in their own little hometown. I was like, there's a big world out there. You know, how can it be in your same small town? Well, I found out that I had to go back to my small town to find my
That's
soulmate.
That's so interesting you say that, because I reconnected with one of my, when I was like 21, 22, I dated this guy. We broke up, he moved away. 25 years later, he found me on Match.com.
Oh, no
and he
kidding.
Said, do you remember me? I'm like, of course I remember you. He's like, I just got divorced. I'm like, oh, I'm single.
Yeah. But give them a year. Yeah. After they've been divorced, make sure
it's
do
been
is hear about the ex-wife.
You don't need drama.
I did. I was like, oh, gosh, no. But anyways, hopefully he's not listening.
So you're dating this man?
We're just friends. He called me his drinking buddy. I'm like,
hold on a second. Let me take my headphones off before
I
hear.
I know. This is
I have to come
talk.
Over and get a reading about this.
This is ghoul talk.
Yes. Yeah. I'm coming to get a reading. But, you know, you travel around a lot, and
yes.
What surprises you about being, you know, a psychic medium? Is there anything new that you just like, oh my gosh, that's just so exciting? Something new happening? Is there?
That's a good question. I think what surprised me was we got asked to be part of a team, because we are psychics, and it used to be like forbidden.
Yeah.
For some reason, you can believe in ghosts, but you couldn't believe in psychics. I didn't get it, but that is so accepted now.
Yes.
It is so accepted, and that gives me happiness, because we're the first ones to say we're tools.
Yeah,
don't ever use us as evidence, but we will maybe guide you where to put the cameras. We'll do all that, but since you can't prove what we say unless there's some history to mm-hmm. match it.
Right.
You know, we're just like an EVP or anything else. Just use us as a tool.
Okay.
And that was surprising. I think the acceptance of what we do is becoming bigger and bigger. I notice now at fairs that on Sunday afternoon, after people have gone to church, they come right to the fair mm-hmm. and get a reading, which is, again, just makes my heart sing, because I love the Christ energy, love that.
Yeah.
You know, so we're not from the dark. I have seen the dark. But yeah, there's a dark to everything.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. You know, so I guess that would be the surprising part.
How do you protect yourself from the dark? Because do you work with groups that go in and do investigations?
Yeah, we do the cleansing, so I definitely.
I gotcha.
We actually use our holy water from a sweat lodge that we always take water in to have it blessed.
Mm-hmm.
And we do protection before we go in with just that golden light, the thought mm-hmm. of the golden light around you.
Okay.
And I believe that our light is so powerful that darkness can't touch it. So I go in with a lot of strength from that.
Mm-hmm.
And we also, some of our team members will wear different gems
okay.
to protect or to push back. And after we're done, I don't believe in leaving the ghost hang out. If they want to move on, I at least give them the opportunity to go to the light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never push. You can't push a spirit, I'll say, this is your choice.
Yeah.
There is a light. You're stuck here. If you feel stuck, you can move on. but we also ask them, if they're going to stay, that they stay where they're at and not come with us.
Yeah.
Unless they want to clean.
Cook and clean.
Yeah, it's funny because Joe and I, we did like 4 ghost investigations, like 4 weekends in a row. I'm telling you, I was like, I think something attached me because I was not myself. I was drained. I was depressed. I was just like, I didn't know what, you know, that I realized mm-hmm. that we needed to cleanse ourselves after, before and after. And I
speak right out to the spirits.
Yeah.
You're not welcome to come home with me. I'm sorry. Bless you.
Mm-hmm.
But go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's okay. No, I was just saying that, in talking to people at these conventions, we've learned so much, and just appreciate everybody's advice because we're new into this, we've always liked it, but we're new into going into places and investigating. And I don't want to bring anything on, I don't want anything attached to me. I'm like, so, we just need to soak up some knowledge about attachments.
Do you know Samantha Harris?
No.
She's a demonologist. She's been on Paranormal Witness, several things. A lot of times she'd be at something like this. And she just had a baby. So being her friends, we're actually going to marry her
nice.
October 14th. And
love is in the air.
Yes. But as older people, we counseled her that maybe she should not do the demonology for a while.
Yeah, with the newborn.
She's got a newborn. Mm-hmm. She's susceptible. She knows all this. She's the expert in it. But she has decided to take a break because she does often get what we were talking about. She gets people following her, or they'll visit her before she comes to the thing. Jason's making faces.
Hi, Jason.
Why I'm on that. And so she has to do a lot of protection herself.
Mm-hmm.
So she'll have things know that she's coming and be ready for her, or they'll actually come to her house where they aren't welcome.
Oh my God!
Because they're trying to stop her from.
You know, that's interesting that you say that, because we just talked to a local group. We had them in the studio, and they mentioned the same thing, that the spirits knew they were coming,
mm-hmm.
and I think I've heard of that before, but it didn't really sink in
mm-hmm.
until they started saying it. I'm like, well, that makes sense that they know they're more powerful than us.
I have them come to me all the time. And then, there was one I remember really vividly was we were going to the History Museum, and this little girl came to me with this wheelchair. And I said, okay, whatever. So we get to the History Museum, and I say to him, do you have a child's wheelchair? It would have been she must have had money because it was kind of a fancy one, but it was an old antique one.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, no, I can't think of anything. And so they go, wait a minute, there might be one in the archives. So we go in the they open the door of the archives, and there sits this child's wheelchair.
Oh, my goodness.
It was her chair.
Yeah.
And things like that happen. And I think that it was that she was, things are donated to the History Museum.
Yeah.
So I think she wanted the history of what that was about.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't write it down as pure history, but they can say, this psychic picked this up about this chair. And she was from a wealthy family. She was one of the lucky ones that if you had a dysfunction like that, not dysfunction, I'm sorry, something wrong, that you would get the best care and the best mobile abilities, mm-hmm. you know, that you could get.
Yeah, so, definitely. You know, we find that a lot of times, you know, in some of the history that we're doing that, you know, if you didn't have a perfect child, they put you into an institution.
Absolutely.
You know, we had a cousin who had Down syndrome, and she was born in the 50s. And my aunt, you know, at the time, they just wanted to stick kids with Downs away. And my aunt's like, no, we're going to integrate her. She was very, you know, ahead of her time. And integrated her into just regular school and, you know, regular life. And Joe and I always talk about it, and people talk about it in our family, that we're really thankful that we grew up with somebody like that because it teaches us compassion and understanding.
Yeah.
Well, I have a aunt who I never got to meet. She died when she was 14. She was hydrocephalic. You know what that is?
Mm-hmm.
It's the water head.
Oh, okay.
And back then they didn't know to put a shunt in, so mm-hmm. she just had a huge head. And just because my grandmother was such a good caretaker, they don't usually live. But Jean Ann is her name. She died when she was 14, when she was starting to go to become a woman, and that was just too much for her body.
Oh, okay.
I have a picture that you would not believe. I mean, it's just incredible that she could have been alive. But she is one of my guides. And she the story about that was she came to me, and I'm like, well, Jean Ann, what are you doing here? And I was getting ready to do a party reading where there's 6 or 7 readings. And I went there, and I says, well, Jean Ann appeared to me. So, you know, and they said, well, who's Jean Ann? And she said, well, she's my aunt who died, and her name is from hydrocephalus. And the woman just about fell down. And the first woman I read had a child who has hydrocephalus and has a shunt and everything now. But for that to happen, that's incredible.
That is.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And she actually stayed with them for a while. Like, when I went home, she didn't come with me. Mm-hmm. But that mother needed that support from Jean Ann. So,
that's great.
Yeah, they always say they're disabled. It's like, maybe we're the ones that are disabled because...
Really.
They're very happy, and, you know, they bring so much love into other people's lives.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think that Down syndrome and children like her are closer to God.
Yeah.
I almost feel like they're angels that are sent to see what we do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
To teach us a lesson in compassion for others. You know, we're so busy in our lives every day. You know, this is what I like about doing these conferences. We get time to sit and talk to people face to face instead of having we still do have our faces and our phones.
I know.
But it's just nice to connect with people on a, you know, just on a one-to-one level, or, you know, be able to talk to new people.
Right.
New people. Because you learn so much from others.
Yes. And with our radio show, we also take young psychics and bring them on because they're so afraid of going face-to-face that first time. So this is like the perfect modality.
Yeah.
And then when we're there to jump in if they get stuck.
Yeah.
So it's a perfect place for them to get their feet wet.
Yeah.
Like,
and so you can help people through all this through radio.
And how do people listen to your radio show? How do they get a hold of you, or...
Okay,
where do they find you?
Tuesday, 7 to 9. It's on Blog Talk. It's actually under the Mystical Awakenings radio programs. So you would go to blogtalkradio.com/mysticalawakeningsradio, and then you would look for Sacred Journeys. That's the name of our show.
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes for this, so they can just click on it. Make it easy.
We'll do the same for you. We have a page we'll put you on, and that'll be great.
All right, well, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you for having me. That was fun.
It was so much fun.
It's fun to be on this side.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, thank you, and you guys have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, Lady Bob.
Thanks.
Well, Joe,
Yep.
It's been a very interesting weekend, a very exciting weekend, a very long weekend.
This has got to be the busiest convention I've ever seen in my life.
Yes, I love it. It's so much energy and so much excitement and just...
It's coming to a close, yes. And the place is still full of people.
I know. We're going to get kicked out.
Yeah, it was funny last night. I don't know his name, but he was yelling, 10 minutes, everybody out.
That was Dave Schrader.
Oh, was it?
It was.
Okay. I can. Everybody's booing him.
Yeah, it was so funny. But anyways, yeah. So anyways. Sorry.
Anyways.
It's been a long day. But we are
what
just.
A great day, though.
Yeah. Oh. We met.
Or weekend, actually.
Yeah, the whole weekend. Other than the bridge. Anyways.
Anyways. So.
I can't even think straight. Yeah. We got so much going on. It's so much visual stimulation from all the people
redheads.
Walking by. Oh, Joe, you and your redheads. But we had a great time.
Yeah, I need to convince, what's her name, to marry me.
I don't know her name.
Okay. But we're losing our minds. I think we lost our minds hours ago.
Yes. But great time, great people, amazing interviews.
Yeah, I hope you guys really enjoyed all the interviews.
Yeah.
I mean, being the professional I am, I just sat here and was like, uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh.
Well, you know what's neat is you see these people on TV, you see them, you know, their books in the bookstore, mm-hmm. or, you know, watch videos or Facebook. But when you get to meet people in person, they're just so nice and so friendly and so outgoing. This is the coolest thing.
Yeah, I mean, everybody is just so friendly. Yeah. And when you get into the paranormal field, a lot of people shun. They think, mm-hmm. oh, paranormal, don't talk yes. to them people. But when you start talking to them, you realize how nice everybody is.
Yeah.
They're just people.
Just people.
They're just people.
Just
I mean,
people.
Like me.
Yeah, baby. All right, Joe. Well, let's wrap
it
up.
Yes. We're going to wrap it up here.
Thanks for listening. And hopefully.
Our next convention.
Yes. Tell
will
them.
Be the Toledo Paranormal
mm-hmm.
in Toledo, Ohio.
Paranormal.
We're
going
to have to travel to Toledo, Ohio.
Yes.
Drive the 5 miles to the Collingwood Arts Center.
Yeah.
But yeah, everybody, check it out. Come and see us.
Yeah, definitely. Come out. I'll have a copy of my book. I'll be doing book signings. Joe's got dowsing rods that he's selling. We have some cool
stickers.
Yeah.
But the big thing is just come out and say hi.
Yeah.
Check out the
Let's
Collingwood Arts
do
Center.
Selfies.
It's a great. Oh, yes. We need to do more. Why do we always forget to do pictures?
I don't know, because we're so busy.
Yeah. So anyhow.
Listen, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening. And
it's
check
all
us
about
out
you.
Next weekend.
We Let's miss you.
Leave them with a little bit of reality from Crud.
Sing at least one show.